T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, our friend D. Snyder's on the line right now, and that's never happened at a show, although he has wanted to jump down and punch a dude in the face at a show.
Well, it hasn't been wanted. He has jumped down and punched somebody in the face at a show.
Born March 5th in Massapequa, New York, we first met him as the frontman for multi-platinum legends, Twisted Sister, but he's since gone on to become a one-man media empire, from film and reality television, to the Broadway stage, to crusading for free speech against the PMRC, hosting his own syndicated radio show, and much, much more. He released a crushing new solo album, Leave a Scar, this past July. And it was just announced that on Sunday, January 16th, he'll be headlining the third day of the Rock Island Fest in Key West, Florida. Please welcome, longtime friend of the show, D. Snyder.
I know, right?
After that intro tape, it's like I should be walking off the stage.
Yeah, well, it's, you think about this
Wait a minute. I got to back up to that freaking girl.
Yeah.
Sitting on that guy's face.
Yeah.
I saw it, man. A, how much fluid did she have in her body? That was like a horse unleashing.
Okay? Yeah.
That was crazy. It reminded me of the stuff that goes on at Guantanamo Bay. You know, what's that?
Yeah.
Like with a rag over your face.
That was
insane.
Yeah, no, she definitely human waterboarded him. It was awful.
She won up L7. Remember?
Yeah.
Remember the girl in L7 did at Ready Festival?
Yes.
She pulled out her thing and
yeah.
threw it to the crowd.
Yeah, she pulled her tampon out, Nick, and whipped it at the crowd. Somebody was giving her the finger. She was like, really? Here's this for you?
Mm-hmm. What?
That was pretty punk rock, the L7 girls. But this is like, you go... Now I got to know the backstory, because clearly she was mad at the guy, but then this guy was some kind of a weirdo masochist who wanted it. That guy clearly wanted this to happen.
I don't know. I mean, halfway through it, I think he was shocked at the quantity of fluid he was
yeah,
going.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I was down for a few minutes, but this is going on a little too long.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. It's so weird. It's just the world gets weirder and weirder.
Yeah, I had to reference that. I just saw that yesterday. Like, what the? You know?
Yeah.
How are you going to top that? I don't know.
Well, that's it, man. But it would be, in old days, it would be legend, wouldn't it? It would be, you know, if there were no video of it, because it's a little too real. But if it just happened.
You're right. A perfect example is the legend that Frank Zappa took a dump on the stage.
Right.
There is a legend. No, I've never seen a picture, I've never seen a film of it, but that Zappa dropped Trow and laid Cable on stage one.
Right.
But I never saw it. Here, you know, there's no arguing the point.
And hey, it's not like you haven't come off the stage and hammered a guy before, you know, deservedly, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But again, it's stuff of legend, too, because when I hear it, it's almost like I was Bruce Lee or something.
Sure.
It was like, you know, it turns instead of one punch, it was something like windmill kick. And then I started key-eyeing and just going crazy. But, you know, it's just like one wild punch in the head, and then there's a big pile on. But there's no evidence, though. The legend builds, you know?
Sure. Well, of course. And you know, you're bigger. You know this. You're tall. You're in great shape. And you come from a place. You're not drunk on stage. You're not wound up on something. If you get that version of Dee Snider, the angry version, you pushed you to the point where you're at that place. It's going to be awful for you because you're a 100% super focused human being at that moment, not just some chode in the audience deciding he's going to flip you off the whole show or throw a drink at you and just wonder if you noticed.
Well, always being clean and sober, which I was listening audience, I always felt I had that. Part of my mentality was it's an advantage because most of the people were wasted.
Right.
So you always had that one up on them because you were, like you said, super focused. You could see there wasn't two of them standing. There was one dude, and you know where the punch was going.
Yeah. And it isn't like you grew up in Beverly Hills. You know?
Yeah, no Beverly Hills with me. No.
No, you, and there's so much fun stuff going on. I'm really excited about this Rock Island that's happening 4 days. A bunch of great bands, exactly the right moment during the year that the world needs it. In January, the middle of January, it's going to be freezing balls everywhere else. Down in the Keys, it's going to be perfect down there.
You know what? These things get booked like way in advance. So Jake called me. I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I didn't know the name of it. I just knew that. I'll do this festival down in Key West in January. Sounds like a good thing. But I've been getting so many calls from people who are flying in,
sure,
boating in, and driving in because that's the time of year. Like, you know what? A 4-day concert, 3-day, whatever it is, in Key West. And by the way, this is the Rocklahoma people.
Yeah.
If anybody's done Rocklahoma, these people know what they're doing. So they put this whole thing together. And, you know, and so I put up again calls, and people are just going to be traveling for this event.
Yeah. And, well, and the guys from Rocklahoma, you know, all those cats, you know, you're exactly right. They know how to put together an event that keeps people coming back because they've not gotten to that place where it's all about the money and how little you can give an audience. These guys are like, all right, let's build the right venue. Let's make sure it's a great event. Let's get the right bands. Let's make sure the prices are correct and build an event that becomes a legend. And those, you know, that's one reason I've traveled every time I could to go see Rocklahoma, because it's such an anomaly, man. There are not many promoters that still believe in creating that kind of an event anymore.
You know what? And props to them. They're fans first and foremost. That's where they come from, you know, putting this thing together. Some of my favorite promoters are the guys. There's a guy down in South America named Paolo Barron, and he's the biggest promoter. And you will see him on stage with every band on the side rocking out. He gets up there and rocks out because he wants, it's all about that. He was a kid once and loved going to shows, and he still loves going to shows. So it's got, the Rocklahoma people like that, too. So this is going to be great.
Yeah, no, it's always been that way. Dave and Mark and those guys that get into this, you know, because that first Rocklahoma I was there, and these were guys who were construction guys who loved music. And you think about the idea of building something in Pryor, Oklahoma. That's a terrible place to start. And
yeah, the dust bowl.
Yeah. And it's in the middle of nowhere, you know, but they created this genuine event that gets bigger year after year, gets better year after year, and now they've moved it down to the Keys. And so this, right in the middle of January, it starts on a Friday, and I'm going to pull the lineup, but it's just going to be fun, man. You just can't have a bad time. Brett Michaels, Night Ranger, Winger, Firehouse, Steelheart on a Friday, Loverboy, who, I don't care what you say, if you don't sing along to that, you don't even have a heart. Skid Row, Warrant, Bullet Boys, Enough's Enough. Of course, UD, you're going to headline Sunday night, Dawkin and Lynch reunion, so you don't even know if you'll get a whole show. It might just be a punch-up between him and Don Dawkin in the middle of it. You know?
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, you never know. George and Don, they've been going at it for so many damn years. Oh, my God. Oh. I think that maybe they're old enough now. They're in, what are they, 100?
Yeah.
You got to put that behind them now. You know, it's time.
You would think, but I will tell you, I was at a weird, so there's a software guy. Down in Austin, Texas, that will put these shows on at his house. And Joan Jett was playing, and Jesse had carried, I'd gone down with Jesse, and then he had done a bunch of songs. There was, you know, Mark Slaughter was there, and there was all this thing going on. And I was talking to Lynch. I just wanted to bring up his, he did that thing with Doug Pinnick, KLM, and Doug Pinnick and Ray Luger from Korn. And I was telling him, man, I really enjoyed that album. I go, because I love King's X, and I love Korn. I go, you know, obviously I love you as a player. And all I got back at him was, yeah, with Ray Luger. And that's all he just kept saying to my face. And I was like, hey, man, I don't know what happened. I just tried to back out of the goddamn room and get away from him. But he gets wound up.
He can be an angry man. He can be an angry man, George. You know what? It's funny. I don't have nothing to do with nothing. But, you know, George, there is dispute. I'm here to tell you, there is major dispute over who started the hammer-on style of guitar playing out on the West Coast.
Get out of here.
And George and Eddie were friends. They used to hang out together. And they were at a show, and he told me the band, the artist they saw, but he did some kind of, it wasn't a metal artist, it was some kind of a hammer-on thing on some strange guitar, and Eddie and George looked at each other and said, that is cool. And they both sort of went off and did their thing, and George, by the way, when Randy Rhoads went on the road with Ozzy,
yep,
George taught his guitar classes at Randy's mom's music school.
No kidding.
George is like that level of guy. And I think he's just a little angry that he's not, even though he's respected, he's not Van Halen, Randy Rhoads.
Right.
You know, he's not in that group. And I think he kind of, well, maybe justifiably thinks he should.
Sure.
He's a great player. And he was there with these guys as they were coming up together. He just got later recognition and didn't have the band to put him over the top.
Yeah, well, he's always struck me as a bit of a genuine musician and tormented, like a crazy composer tormented. Because clearly he's got so much going on inside him, and he's such an amazing player. But yeah, because he's always feels like a firecracker.
Yeah. So how you been, man? I haven't talked to you in a while. I mean, this is. You know, I've seen you in a while. I didn't go to Sturgis the past few years. Did you go this year?
Yeah. No, we made it up to Sturgis. You know, I had that little weird, well, we talked since then, that pancreatic issue in July. And that hopefully just went by. I just got past it. That was super weird. That laid me out in the hospital for, you know, 9 days. And then after that, I just took it easy for a few months. Did Sturgis, took it easy there, to the motorcycle ride, and you know, kind of eased my way into this Thanksgiving. But yeah, it's been weird. What has been good is spending time with Leave a Scar, because I want to talk about Rock Island. But man, I really got time to spend with this last album of yours. It is just great. It is just fantastic, man.
Thanks, man. I hope that, you know, I'm hoping that next year. I mean, this year, you know, everything was sort of on and off. I said, I'm not doing this dance. But you're going out there, you're doing a show, and then you cancel or postpone because someone got COVID or whatever. And they, you know, so I said, I'll wait till next year and do something with, you know, more with the album, go out and support the album. And I can't wait to play this stuff live because it's just sledgehammer, heavy metal. And I love the shocked look on a lot of the older fans' faces. Because they're slowing down, and I got no time to slow down, man. I got no time to slow down.
And what have you been doing? Have you now? Because you did have some time off. I know. Hey, well, your daughter got stuck down South America in Peru, and she made it back. Have you been hanging at the island? Do you still have the house now, or did you get rid of it?
Yeah, no, I've got the house down in Belize.
Yep.
We spent a lot of time down there. I tell you, harkening back, that was a year ago in March. So. For the people listening who, just a quick refresher. So my daughter was on like a spiritual retreat that my sons had gone on, my wife had gone on in the jungles of Peru. Super safe, super great, you know, just like a experience that changed their lives. And we sent our daughter down there for this event, and the world shut down. She was there that week in the middle of March when countries just shut their borders, and she was stuck in Peru. And Peru, you know, as nice as it is, when you go, I don't know if you ever travel. You travel a lot, Johnny.
No, I've been through Peru extensively. Yeah, no, through Iquitos and down to the Amazon.
Beautiful. Yeah. But it's an emerging nation.
Right.
And when you close those borders, you remember, oh, yeah, this is a dictatorship. This is a military government, actually.
Right.
And they've got all of the drug cartels are all in those jungles. And suddenly it was a wild west down there, and my daughter was trapped there in the jungle. And I just went. I mean, people said, oh, well, you know, you're Dee Snider. You gotta, I said, it had nothing to do with that. It was father on a mission to save his daughter. I was blowing everybody up, calling anybody, everybody. And I got her flown out of there. And she said, and we were just talking about it the other day. She said, when she was watching what was going on in Afghanistan, it reminded her of them taking her out. The people who were getting on the plane, there was like, you know, people running after the plane and crying, trying to get on, and all that craziness, the military in the streets, and wondering, you have to show papers to get through to the next checkpoint. Getting her out of there was like hell. I tell you, a year after the event, and I was like on mission, I just got on the phone with all the guys who helped me. I broke down.
Yeah.
I broke down on the phone a year later, just, you know, thinking back. I mean, at the time, I was like hyper-focused, but the relief of, oh, my God, we actually got her out of there. There were thousands of Americans stuck, and I was able to get my daughter out of there in one piece, undamaged, uncompromised, you know. And that's the thing. That was tough.
Dude, to be a girl is a hard, and this is not a gender thing, but it is. When you're alone by yourself in a situation like that, and you're a girl, you're a double target. It's not just robbery, you're also a woman. And that's a rough, rough part of this world. I mean, there are places I travel, I just don't take my girlfriend with me. And it's because, not because I don't think she can hang or because she's not cool, but because I think, man, that's what, I'm real vulnerable, and she's real vulnerable in these places. Iquitos is not for punks. The Amazon is not. This is a rough, hard, tough world. And if you're an American spending money in good times, you're probably going to be okay. But, man, we all saw what the world's happened in the United States, let alone go to a second world country. You're 1,000% right, man. You got to get her out of there.
Oh, and my daughter's, you know, my daughter's like a bleach blonde, covered with tattoos. I mean, she's obviously not a native. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, check this, dude. So I had black ops guys. I had mercenaries. I had the U.S. government, all these people, and people working with me, helped me. And I get a call one day and said, dude, tell your daughter, get off social media. She dropped a pin on where she's located.
Yeah.
And I said, because unfortunately we had communication. I said, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I just Instagrammed when I was up. I'm like, no, you don't drop a pin. These Snyder's daughter's in the jungle. Here she is.
I wonder what she's worth. Yeah. I wonder how much money he'd be willing to pay for that.
Yeah. A lot, too.
Yeah, of course. But dude, it's a crazy world we live in, man. Just when you think you've seen everything, D, you came up, you know, in Jersey, and you got the deal, and you traveled Europe and Twisted Sister, and then onward even into the bigger world from writing and performing in movies and plays and screenplays and solo stuff and television shows and just it goes on and radio shows. You know, you never in a million years think that's going to be something you're going to be up against with your daughter, your family, in the middle of a pandemic, which we never thought we'd see, in a country of that nature, where you're on the outside, on the wrong side of that wall, man. There's nothing you can do to prepare yourself for these. There's no stretch of the imagination that you think this is coming up.
And you're right, and you're also right that it's one thing to put ourselves as dudes into harm's way. And again, I know this sounds very sexist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm sorry, folks, there are just physical differences.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are physical differences between men and women. But I've been in these countries and places, and I'm going, you know, keeping my eyes open and watching my back and whatever. And, you know, and for a young girl to be out there, and, you know, and like I said, everything's fine until the world collapses. Then all of a sudden people turn into animals, and desperation sets in. And we see this in little ways in our own country, but in these, we don't hear too much about what's going on in these emerging nations and the problems they're having,
right?
Because they don't have near the resources that we have. So once desperation sets in, things get crazy. So again, I feel blessed. I never imagined having to ever have to deal with something like that. But you know what? You do what you got to do.
You know what? Finally, being Dee Snider, the super over-the-top, hyper-focused dad, paid off in her mind, too. I'm sure she was like, whew, all those times I thought you were too hard on me. Now I'm so glad you're that dad, that you're that capable, you're that, I'm never going to give up on this.
Some government official said, Dee, if I'm ever trapped in some place, I want you to be the one getting me out.
Right.
I was unrelenting. I mean, I just would not stop working the phones, making the calls, you know, just doing anything and everything I could. They were getting bombarded from all sides. But hey, you know, I mean, it's my kid.
Yeah,
you know, that was like, again, in my life, that was one of the worst. I don't think I took a full breath for 2 weeks. While she was trapped down there. It was crazy.
It's now we're starting to see the other side of all of this that we just, and in America, we only saw, you know, some glimpses of how bad it could be. I mean, there are some places, and in India now, and poorer places that just aren't getting any help and aren't getting any medical care. Their people are dying at a much larger rate, and their food is run out, and their supply lines are blown out. You know, we're getting ready to come back on the other side of this, it feels like. And God willing, the creek don't rise. You know, we're back into it in 22. Bands get to tour. The world moves forward. You know, things get better for everybody. But it really was a pretty weird time that none of us could have seen coming, man. And all of your touring and your life and all the experiences you've had, is there anything you could even compare it to?
You know, first of all, I'll say, as I say, that we were down in Belize we got there like on March 13th, and then they closed the border, so we were in Belize. And Belize being an emerging nation, as many expatriates there,
yeah.
You know, there's, you know, like tons of people have money, but the country itself is very poor. And they were very aware that if COVID came to them, it could wipe them out. They don't have the hospitals. They don't have the resources. So it was military on the streets. Curfews. They were trying to get people a $5,000 fine if they were caught on the streets or not wearing masks. It was so crazy, but they knew they had no choice but to be that strict. So I got, you know,
yeah, that's right.
I got to experience that part of the world where they don't have those kind of resources. And we were complaining in the States that we didn't like this, we didn't like that. You know, here they dudes with machine guns on the streets.
Yeah,
you get inside.
And it worked. And, you know, as hard as that sounds, it worked really well in those places. My buddy lives in Curacao, and he goes, look, they locked it down. He goes, but these people also know they're pretty poor. The locals, the Papiamentu people, he goes, they know there's only so much hospital to go around, and they've only got this much coverage and money and what's going to happen. So they took it seriously, and they had a really low count, really low infection rate, really low death rate, but they were not screwing around. They were exactly like that. There were soldiers and cops going up and down the street like, hey, it's going to go this or this, and you're going to hate this.
Yeah, and you know what you said, I've never experienced anything like that. I don't know if this qualifies, but remember way back in '84, when Reagan bombed, was it Iraq or Iran that he just he
it was said, Iran, yeah.
I don't think Reagan, yeah. And we were on tour in Europe. The Europeans were not happy with that action, and the reason they weren't is because this was in their backyard. They felt like, you know, we here in the United States is a separate continent, thousands and thousands of miles away, but this was where they live. And when you spent time in Europe, it's like states over there.
Right.
We see them as countries. They're the size of states, and they're right next to each other. So, in the course of a day's drive, you could go through 3-4 countries.
Easily.
Languages, passports, you know, and just cultures and, you know. So we were over there, and there was a lot of hostility towards Americans. And I don't remember, but back then, I think it was Dokken or somebody had their bus set on fire by locals. And they weren't in Iran or anything. They were in, I think, Ireland or someplace. People were just pissed off at the United States. So we had to travel with, like, armed security around us to protect us from potential retaliation for actions that the Europeans thought was a little too hostile, like I said, in their backyard.
We don't ever think about
all the experience with that.
And you guys, because, and you, above all, I think, had probably the best embrace, because Lemmy loved you guys before you ever got big. He endorsed you. Lemmy from Motorhead was always like, you know, would walk out and introduce you guys on stage, basically letting them know, hey, man, these are friends. You know, these are brothers. These guys are part of our, of us. And so you guys, at least in the UK, I feel like had at least some arms around you.
Yeah, well, you know, Lemmy, my God, you know, what a loss. You know, and not to brag, this is not a brag, this is just, I'm so flattered. You heard about those bullets with Lemmy's ashes?
Right, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that.
Well, of course.
The doorbell rings one day, and there's a special delivery.
Oh, man.
And it's a little box, and I open it, and there's one of the Lemmy bullets with the ashes. And we were friends, and I never expected. You just don't think, you know, you're that one of those chosen people. But, yeah, so what an honor to receive that from his family and friends, for people who work with him, and said, yeah, no, D, you were one of those guys.
No, that was a huge honor. I only know one other person, Whitfield. As soon as it happened, Whitfield had reached out to me, and he sent me a picture of the note and the bullet. And I can tell you, like, it broke him down, like I'm sure it did you, because it was, it is the highest possible honor you could ever receive from Lemmy, and how he felt about you, that you were family to him. And he was a guy who didn't.
And he really was. You were saying, you know, and for Twisted, he was that sort of a passport. Maybe that's a word for it. I mean, because, you know, when we got there in 82, 83, there was no, makeup was not a thing. Girl, remember the band Girl with Phil Lewis from who wound up being in
LA Guns,
and Phil Collins from Def Leppard. They were bottled off the stage at the Reading Festival because they were wearing a little makeup in the very early 80s. Anvil, they called them Canvil for a while because people were upset that Lips had on fishnet glovelets.
Wow.
Now, he used to wear these fishnet like things on his forearms, and they thought that was gay. And so when Twisted Sister walked out, and this is, you know, like I said, the crew hadn't broken out yet. Nobody, we were just carrying that weird torch for that approach. And I remember going, we had this weird, before the first album came out, we got special guests with Motorhead at a football stadium. And I don't know how anybody, I think it was because our managers knew each other, his managers and our managers knew each other. No one had ever seen us in the UK. And we went on in the daylight for the first time. And a Motorhead crowd, oh, my God, that was an intense, heavy, aggressive crowd. And it's a football stadium full. And we walk on stage, and I tell you what, I mean, you can see the arms going back with the bottles. People said, like, and here we go. And Lemmy walks out. I'd never met the guy. Actually, although credit with credit to Pete Way from UFO had called Lemmy. Pete Way was producing our first album. I said, Lemmy, these are some friends of mine. Take care of them. You know, they're coming in today. So I guess Pete saw the writing on the wall. We were going to be done before we even did our first song. And Lemmy came out, and I can't translate because it was something like, but apparently that meant he is a friend of mine. Give him a listen. I now speak fluent Lemmy. Oh, by the way, a great game to play, by the way. This is I didn't even do it with Lemmy. I do it with Ozzy. Is when it... Whenever I do an interview with Lemmy or Ozzy on the air, after we went off, I would play, what did Ozzy or Lemmy just say?
Yes, yes.
With a T-shirt, if you could figure it out. We play back just bits of sound bites. You could do that with a Brian Johnson from AC/DC as well. Yeah. And then people would call in and say, was it something about the tour? No, I'm sorry. It wasn't about the tour.
Yeah.
So, Lemmy, you talked about him introducing us. He would show up at our shows in the UK through the front door. He would walk into the front door. Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead. They were playing football stadium. And he would just show up, walk in, come and say, hey, what's going on? And he would come up and he would introduce the band. So he was really, he knew that we deserved to be listened to. He also, I think, was very aware that the way we looked in 1982 was not, that we're not ready for that yet. You know, the hair metal hadn't happened. It was just, we were just a weird metal band. But he got it, and he used to show up and introduce the band and get up and play with us.
No, and he loved loved Twisted and loved you. And Damon Lemmy was one of those guys. Like, I barely knew him, but I definitely knew who he was and how he was through other friends. He abhorred hypocrisy, and he loved honesty and straightforwardness and purity in that sense. Like, when they did the Motorhead cover record, I was like, I'm texting Diego, did you know that? And I don't think you even knew at the time that he loved, or you knew he loved the song, but he covered Shoot 'Em Down on that album.
Yeah, they were doing it live in the last couple of years that he was alive, and they were touring. He was playing Shoot 'Em Down. What an honor.
Yeah.
I mean, what an honor. But you talk about he liked honesty.
Yeah.
So Lemmy, the first time I'm like hanging with Lemmy, he calls me in to another room, and he breaks out a little, lays out two lines of coke. Now, and I looked at him, I said, I don't do drugs. And Lemmy said, okay, more for me. And that was I think he hung out with me because he didn't have to share.
Sure. But isn't that great, man? Dude, it's funny. Everybody I've ever known who really knew Lemmy, when I'll ask him stories, it's always the same feel. It's just such a love and an honesty and a respect and a friendship. You know, Whitfield will go on for days. Whitfield used to say, the Ugly Kid Joe tours, I would try to find the ones where they'd end somewhere near a Motorhead tour, and I'd go ask Lemmy if I could ride the bus with them so I could sit up at night and listen to him tell stories about music and Jimi Hendrix and Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy and all that he'd gone through with Hawkwind. And you can tell when he tells those stories, it's going to be one of the great things that fills his heart when he gets to be an old man.
Oh, you're right. The man lived those 70 years or whatever it was he did. He lived some stuff.
Yeah.
And like you said, like people you mentioned, Hendrix. He roadied for Hendrix. So, I mean, we were talking one day, and he was talking about who was a better band, the Beatles or the Stones. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, Stones are rock. He's seen both. He saw the Beatles in the Cavern
Isn't
Club.
That crazy?
He saw the Stones at the Marquee Club. And he said, the Beatles.
Dude.
Were much better live. They were an amazing live rock band. The Stones sucked. You know, people know that Stones. The Stones are the greatest Stones in the world.
Right.
They can do the Stones better than anybody else. They are just amazing as the Stones. But they really can't, like, do covers and stuff.
Right.
The Beatles, he said, the Beatles not only were a better band, he said, they were amazing comedians. They used to do stand-up, like, in between songs. They had this, like, for repartee, and they'd have the audience rolling. He said they were incredible. But how many people do you know that were at the Cavern Club
right.
watching the Beatles? He's the only person I ever met that was actually there.
See, that is just, that's the stuff that, and that's where you and I think, became friends, is just the nerdery of music, the true love of all of that, the thing that saved you as a kid, the thing that brought you into this incredible career, besides, you know, obviously talent and hard work, is there's just a nerd living inside you, inside of me, that's what you love. Those stories, I could never get tired of hearing somebody tell me those stories. Never. I can never get tired of listening to you.
And you should never lose that inner nerd. Like, I Alice Cooper and Robert Plant, I can now call them friends.
Crazy. Yet,
there's a time that I'm with them that the kid in me doesn't go, oh my God, I'm hanging with this girl. It's cool.
Right.
I mean, you know, I mean, because I have his posters on my wall, and they know. I've been completely honest with them. You know, Robert, I literally had your poster over my wall. And, you know, and I used to literally, like, before going to bed, I used to bow to Robert before I went to bed. I mean, you know, there's no shame in my game.
No,
it's
man.
Shame again. You know why? Because they had their heroes, too.
Yeah,
they had their heroes too, and a lot of them were fortunate enough to meet their heroes along the way. So
yeah.
So you got to be honest.
Well, and I'll tell you, I can't wait to get down to Key West, Florida, for this show, for this Rock Island. That's happening January 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. Look it up yourself, ROKIslandFest.com, and Dee's going to be you're headlining Sunday night. All 4 days are going to be killer. Jackal's going to close it out on that Monday night. Loverboy's going to headline one night. And Brett Michaels is headlining one night. But it's going to have every level of pass and package from hotels across the board. But most of all, it's going to be rock and roll in the sun, in nice weather, when everybody else is freezing their ass off. What a great way to spend a few days, man. And I can't wait to catch up.
I don't know if I should tell this. The promoters will probably... I don't know if they'll be upset I said this, but I don't think you, I think you have to be there, even me telling you, that'll change it. They said, when Twisted Sister played Rocklahoma, and that was a dead of summer, we had just released our, we had released our Christmas album earlier the year before, and it was one of our biggest selling records. And in the middle of July or August, where we were in the Dust Bowl of Rocklahoma,
yeah,
we made it snow. And we did a Christmas song, and it brought the friggin' house down. And the promoter said to me, we want you to make it snow. We want to experience that. Please, will you do that again? So it's going to be Key West, and it's going to be January Key West, but I'm going to make it snow. In January in Key West, so you don't want to miss that either.
No, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see you, my friend. I'll definitely be there. And, man, it's just great to hear your voice, Dean.
Hey, thanks, brother. Can I just run down the quick litany of things with me?
Yes.
I got the new album, Leave a Scar. People, it's available everywhere. But if you want to get some vinyl, some merch, things like that, go to martyrstore.net. Martyrstore.net. I've got my own line of coffee coming out. Dee Snider's For the Love of Coffee.
Excellent.
DeathBlendCoffee.com. Dee Snider's For the Love of Coffee. Because, you know, I'm a coffee junkie.
Yeah.
And if you want a special holiday greeting for your loved one and metalhead, go to Cameo and get a message from Dee Snider. I've got a 5-star rating. I really get into it. You know, that always makes a good gift for somebody. All right, I just did my pitch. So
first of all, how'd you slip the coffee by me, man? I didn't know about that, and I feel like I'm up on most stuff. Like, I had no idea. That sounds fantastic.
It's coming out, actually, about another week. It is actually going to be available. So, and, you know, I'm a coffee junkie, and I mean, I love Guatemalan coffee. I love a certain brew. And I said, so what do you want to call your coffee? I said, for the love of coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that I was once almost kicked out of Twisted. You know that from reading the book. I was almost fired from Twisted Sister for being too caffeinated. So just to put perspective on this, four guys who were doing hard drugs threatened to fire me because I was drinking too much coffee.
Yeah.
That's the truth. I never did drugs. I never drank. But damn if I wasn't out of my mind on caffeine. So I love coffee. So I'm really happy I got my own coffee on deathsledcoffee.com.
I will talk to you between now and Rock Island for sure. Don't forget the Christmas music. Don't forget to get the new record. If you don't have Leave a Scar, you're missing it. Jump online, check it out, listen to it, see if you like it. I'm telling you, it is absolutely amazing, man. And and don't forget about the coffee. And as soon as that comes in, I'll buy some of that as well.
Hey, you know what? This was an interview. I always feel like you are here just talking and catching up.
Yeah.
So I hope you people enjoy seeing Johnny just catching up and talking because he's one of my favorite people to talk to. So
I love you.
All right, brother. And everybody, have a great Thanksgiving. All right.
I don't know if I know how to do an interview anymore. As weird as that sounds, you know what I mean? Like, you know when they write down their 10 questions and you don't listen to the answer of the first question and then you go to the second question, even if it doesn't connect?
Sure.
And you're like, what's your favorite color of car? Like,
and you're already worried about the next.
And then you're like, okay, now I have to ask him, did you have any religion growing? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That seems weird to me. I think, dude, he's one of the great talkers and great conversationalists in the world, if you ask me. There's certain people that I could listen to forever.
Well, I don't mean dabble in a bad way, but he is talented and has the skills to be in so many different areas. And he just brings so much to talk about.
He says yes, and he works his ass off. Those are the two things. Like, I find people that, like, Jesse Dupree, same way. There's a reason I'm always drawn towards people. I'll go, man, your husband. Mike, the reason I like Mike so much, he works his ass off every day, and he goes and he knows that every day is special. Every day is important. And there's just certain people in this world. I go, man, that's why I want to be friends with him. My great uncles were like that. And then, of course, you throw in the fact that Dee is one of the greats in rock and roll. And you know, I've told you the story. I don't waste time when he's on telling it, but Iron Maiden was playing Kemper Arena. Twisted Sister was opening the show. And we worked our way back with Iron Maiden passes, and Twisted was getting ready to take the stage. And I'm just a kid. And I was with a couple of dirty girls.
Mm-hmm.
And Dee Snider comes around the corner, and at this time, he's wearing the full Twisted gear. So he's also, he's like 6 foot nine,
mm-hmm.
10.
Plus the shoulder pads and the crisscross.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about the heels,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just a kid. I haven't even grown to 6 foot yet. And he walks around, and it's like that that Coke commercial. Like when you saw Mean Joe Green go by, was it Mean Joe Green in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he didn't toss me a Coke or a jersey or anything, but he stopped and he turned around and he was like waving through the horns at me. And I was like, oh, but he did. And that meant like game changer. You know, we were all just silent. We saw him come down the hallway around the ramp that you've seen now in Kemper. You know what mm-hmm. I'm talking about. There's that hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk onto the floor and then you go up the ramps to the stage. And we were there at that ramp area. And he walked by, and we're like, oh, you know, because you're a kid, you're completely in awe.
Oh, of course.
Of everything you see. And I'll always remember, it's just stuff like that. He's always been bigger than life to me.
Yeah.
So, and again, if I ever get stuck in a second, third world country, that's a dude I want on my side.
Hell yeah.
The first call.
That's, you know, that's one of those guys.
This is the Johnny Dare Morning Show.
The Johnny Dare Morning Show.
On 98.9.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.